Good afternoon and welcome to this pre-Ravens Super Bowl edition of And Then There's That, a bi-weekly podcast of people, politics, and punditry in Howard County on the HOCO Mojo Network. I'm Paul Scalney, and I'm here at the Mall in Columbia with my co-host, Dennis Lane. On today's show, Dennis and I will talk about the Ravens, who's going and who's not, development in Symphony Woods, and unions in our library system. And joining us today is Nikki Highsmith-Vernick, the president and CEO of the Horizon Foundation. Nikki will tell us what the Horizon Foundation is all about and talk about the new direction she's taken the organization since taking over as its leader. And I'm certain she may even talk about her love for the Big Gulp. But first, a word from our sponsor. We'll be right back.
Check out what's happening around Columbia Association on the new CA Today blog or the new weekly video series, This Week at CA. Get information about current projects, upcoming programs, CA facilities, and more. Visit columbiaassociation.org/CA Today or check out our This Week at CA playlist on YouTube for the latest news. This message has been brought to you by Columbia Association.
All right, Dennis, what do you have to get us started on this blustery day?
Well, you said, you know, the Ravens, who's going, who's not. We're talking, of course, to the Super Bowl in New Orleans this coming Sunday. I'm not going. You?
I'm not. But, you know, I'll tell you, it's on my bucket list.
It is.
I felt like, you know what, when am I going to have this chance again? And I thought maybe I should go this year, but couldn't pull it off.
You know, I kind of feel the same way. As a matter of fact, we just ran into a friend here in the mall, who Diane Friedman, her husband Rob, is on his way. I guess they
that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Right, but it was a bucket list thing for him and some of the guys in his office, and I get that. But I don't know. It's about $5,000. You know?
I talked to a client. I was just going to say, I talked to a client of mine, and it was on his and his wife's bucket list. $6,200 each for the package.
Yeah.
Flight, airfare, hotel, party, giveaways. Right. Yeah, they jazz it up.
Yeah.
But $6,200 for 4 hours?
For a football game, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. My couch is looking awfully good.
And not that, but, you know, God forbid. But should they not prevail? that $6,200 would feel even worse.
I went the year they didn't make it.
Yeah.
So it was kind of funny. The Baltimore Sun went around and was asking people, you know, who's going, who's not, and asked our county council. And so I think Ken Allman's going.
Of course he's going. Was there ever any doubt?
That's governor of the Maryland, right?
Right.
Then we have Greg Fox is taking his son.
Yeah. Greg is gone.
And Courtney Calvin are sort of, they're going
to
watch.
They're going to stay at home. I think Courtney's going to a party, and Calvin has some rituals at home. He doesn't want to jinx.
And Jen's going to watch. Mary Kay cracked me up. She's like, I'm going to read a book.
She's the artist on the council, you know.
Football, what's that?
Really?
Nothing to do with it.
You know, one of the things, of course, everything's purple all around town. Our guest is wearing purple. You've got purple on today.
You've got purple on.
Yeah, we got the purple thing going. And even somebody took a picture from the Merrill Lynch building the other day of the top of the mall at night. I didn't realize they've lit the pyramids here up in purple at night.
We're having some friends over on Sunday, and my wife went to great extremes trying to find, like, purple floodlights and purple this and purple that.
Can't get them.
Dave says he's got them. Yeah. All right.
Of course he's got them.
All right.
Of course he's got them.
We'll talk after the show.
But there's a run on purple in town.
You couldn't find stuff.
And, you know, before we move on to other stories, though, there was a great story about a Raven in the paper today, and he actually won't be playing in the Super Bowl because of an injury he suffered early in the season, but Ladarius Webb volunteered some time. He took out to and showed up at a Long Reach High School football game.
Now, I didn't have a chance to read the stories. Does he have an affiliation with Howard County or the school system?
It kind of goes back to his neighbor used to coach for Long Reach and had met, he and Ladarius became friends, and he kind of mentioned that he was involved with you know, kids' sports, and Webb said, Ladarius said something to him about how he'd like to do that. You know, he's really into helping the kids out, and he said, well, why don't you come by to a game sometime? And so he did. He showed up at a game, and the funny part was, you know, and Long Reach didn't have a great season, and they were kind of getting beat pretty badly in this game.
Getting their butts kicked.
Yeah, getting their butts kicked. And Ladarius pulled one of the kids aside at halftime and said, you know, gave him a couple tips. Said, watch the quarterback's eyes. And, you know, the kid ended up getting an interception in the second half. You know, that's a great story.
But you know what? I love when
from the pros.
Yeah, when the pros come out and they do that community kind of stuff, I think that's great.
That's great. So, great story.
Right, wrong, or indifferent, kids look up to them. And to the extent that we can tap into that, that's great.
And, you know, a lot of people don't realize a lot of these Ravens do live here in Howard County. So it's, you know,
so it's a big week of state of. I think Governor O'Malley gave his State of the State, and he set the groundwork for being the next president of the United States.
Yes.
Ken Allman, our county executive, followed suit and gave his State of the County the next day, set the groundwork for being the next governor.
The next gov.
And, yeah, you know, I think we were all wondering, when's he really going to go there? And I think we all laughed going back to right after he won his second election, how the website on his his Ken Ullman website changed, and it went from being sort of very county-esque,
very Howard County,
to being sort of a statewide.
Had a star model in the middle of Maryland.
Yeah, it showed Maryland had a star. Well, he's now, and his theme of the state of the county this week seemed to have been a model for Maryland. And rather than running from what I think a lot of people thought he might do, which is, you know, Howard County has
most
this perception
county,
of, you know, we're this, we're that, we have everything.
Kids.
You know, how do you really run for governor?
I understand that Guess is going to correct us on that.
But he's embracing it. And to his credit, I think he's saying, you know what, we've got great things here, and let me show you why. And that's sort of his theme going forward. Model for Maryland.
And, you know, it's funny. You said, we don't know when he's going to announce. And it was our last guest, Doug Gansler, who said, it's only the media that cares about when we're going to announce. I said, no, I think everybody cares about when you're going to announce. So announce it, you know. We're all talking about
it. Well, but there's some people that I think you just know. Ken's going to run.
Yeah.
Gansler's going to run.
Going to run. Anthony Brown, he's going to run.
But then you got that local. You got the guy Gazzoni. Is he going to run? Is he not?
Well, we'll get to that show when we have Chris Oxenham and Roger back in March.
Yeah, so. But yeah, there's some questions.
There's some interesting things coming up on that, too. One more thing about Ken's speech, though. I thought the funny part was, who knew that Howard County is, like, sushi-crazed? How about, did you hear that, Nick?
Yeah, at Wegmans.
Yeah. Wegmans sells more sushi out of this store than any of their other stores. Like, by...
Well, I will confess that I am a little bit of a sushi snob, but I will... And I don't generally buy sushi from, like, a Safeway.
Why doesn't that surprise me?
That's why I said it was for your benefit. But that's okay. Wegman sushi is really good.
It's very good.
It's awesome.
Good. Oh, yeah.
And my son, he'll go in there and he'll pop down 2 packs of California rolls.
Yeah. Now,
so
my daughter.
We're contributing.
Yeah, me too. My daughter's not crazy about their spider roll, which is one of her favorites. But yeah, I mean. And
not good enough for the princess?
Apparently not.
Ellicott City?
Ellicott City. Next story up. Ken, but we're kind of keeping on the level of Ken. Ken has put $3 million in his capital budget for Ellicott City improvements. You're smiling.
Well, I'm smirking.
That's right. It wasn't a smile. It was a smirk.
We've talked before about how there's always an understory to every story.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, and I can't help but wonder, you know, $3 million into the Ellicott City infrastructure, yeah, it's a nice sum of money.
Sure.
But is it enough to make a difference? And how much of this is real? And how much of this is media?
Well, it kind of goes. First of all, I'm sure the people in Ellicott City are tickled because, you know, anything helps and, you know.
And they need all the help they can get down there.
Sidewalk
Absolutely.
Improvements, anything. You know, they certainly have had a rough time. You know, you think it was only last summer that they had this train derailment. And tragedy seems to be a constant companion to Ellicott City. So it's nice that there's money going to be put back into it. But from Ken's perspective, again, this model for Maryland, here he goes to ribbon cuttings and things happening in Columbia all the time and plans announced for Symphony Woods. But he also is saying, I also care about the historic districts and the preservation stuff. So it kind of fits in that whole model.
And look, to his credit and to the credit of Howard County at large, they dealt with the tragedies of Ellicott City the last year extremely well.
Very well, very well.
And they should be commended for that.
Yeah.
But the other thing that's interesting to me from a political perspective with this $3 million is, you know, we've talked about how Courtney Watson kind of separated herself a little bit from the Howard the Ullman administration.
Yes.
And in the last 6 months, she has sort of come back, and she's cozied up with Ken a little bit. And the question is this because she thinks that Guy Gazzoni's not going to run, and really she needs to be there to get his support?
Certainly.
And how much of this in her district is politics, and how much of it's real?
You know, you can't ever discount.
Food for thought.
Yeah, food for thought. But before I leave on Ellicott City, though, finally, the Parker, the Streetline new Parker system for Ellicott City, where you will now have to pay with this high-tech parking system in Ellicott City, is finally going live. You know, it's been ready. It looks like it's been ready to go. Everything's been installed, but apparently they've had some software glitches to work out. But the spaces are striped.
Yeah, so I was down in Ellicott City for a meeting last week, and I wasn't sure if the meters were live yet. And I went into my meeting, and I asked the person. I said, the meter's live? And she said, no, you're good.
No, you're fine.
So I said, no ticket? She said, no ticket.
Tickets.
I said, cool. So I came back out after a two-hour meeting, and I had a ticket. I'm like, what the heck? So I pulled out the ticket, and I'm looking at it. And apparently my bumper was about 12 inches over these new striped lines.
Stay within the lines.
Don't go all the way out. They only sort of are on the curb. And
stay within. So. Didn't they ever tell you in elementary school, stay within the lines?
Yeah. So yeah, well, $35 later.
$35. Ellicott City, thanks you. Anyway, that goes live on Tuesday, I think. Monday or Tuesday next week.
I think, yeah.
Yeah. And if you want, the county's got a, you go to the county website, Public Works, the whole list of the fees and when, you know, it's not all day. I think it stops at 6 o'clock at night. It's between 10 and 6.
And I know we've talked about it before, but that app is really cool where you can go on live and see where spots are available.
It is cool. And
that's neat.
And the county ended up coming up with a program for the residents, so residents can get a free parking pass. So that's good. So if you live down there, you don't know about that, you should look into it because you won't get hurt by this. Symphony Woods, I talked about things happening in Columbia and Ellicott City and kind of keeping those things going. Well, Symphony Woods is big news because it was, I think, 2 weeks ago now that the Columbia Association unveiled a completely revised idea for Symphony Woods. It's kind of the backstory is Cy Pommier, a resident and former employee of the Rouse Company, had come up with a plan for Symphony Woods. It had a fountain, and it was nice, it was pretty and everything, but it kind of went through several steps of this 18, 20-step, I don't know, town center approval process, and about midway through, they said, no. They said, it needs a couple of things. It needs... it needs meandering paths, and they thought it was a little too I don't want to say antiseptic. What am I trying to say? Too
serene.
Severe. Severe, I guess. And what was the draw to bring people into the park? So, to their credit, CA kind of went back to the drawing board. And in the meantime, on his own initiative, a Columbia resident, who also is a former Rouse guy, but not Rouse from the Rouse Company, Rouse from the Enterprise Foundation days, a guy named Michael McCall, longtime Columbia resident, took it by his own initiative to come up with a different idea. And they really kind of changed the whole paradigm. And they've come up with this whole Arts Village concept. Anyway, it's getting great response from the community. But typically, there's some pushback. There's some people who are happy with the other plan. And they're,
that's Howard County. You're going to have pushback.
Right. How do we do it without that? But anyway, they had a meeting last night. About 100 people showed up. Lots of people were getting information. People seem to be pretty pleased, want to know when it's going to happen, not why. But according to some people I've talked to, is that... Cy Pommier, who had the old plan, was there marching around his other plan, trying to get people to get on board with him.
And so there are people that have embraced his plan, and because they've embraced his plan, they don't like this plan.
They can't see beyond that.
But, you know what? I think it's a cool plan. I think Symphony Woods can be a lot of great things that it's not right now, but I'm in that camp that I believes that I don't think you're going to get people to come there as a destination. I think if you're on the waterfront, you're going to a restaurant, you're at the mall, you're at one of the new amenities that's going to hopefully emerge in the next 5 years, and it's a beautiful night. You can say, I'm going to walk down there and walk through the park, or I'm going to go sit there. You know, right now it is a park, but it's really, I think, as Dave said, it's just a conglomeration of trees, and that's it. There's nothing there
except for Merriweather.
There are no benches. There's nothing.
Well, they're talking about putting their headquarters there. So CA is really leveraging their assets to make it an arts village, and their headquarters will help that because it will draw people in. But also the other piece of it is Toby's Theater. They're talking about putting Toby's Theater into the woods, which is a great idea. And a lot of people don't realize this dinner theater that we have in town is not like any dinner theater. You know, some people have a preconceived notion of what a dinner theater is. Well, Toby's is...
Bad food, bad acting.
Bad food, bad acting. That is not the case with Toby's at all. If you haven't been to a play there, you really owe it to yourself to check it out. And I just as further evidence of that, they recently announced the nominations for the Helen Hayes Awards, which is a regional award for theater. And Toby's Dinner Theater, I think it's the only dinner theater that got any nominations. Not only did they got 8 nominations, more than any other theater in Washington.
Now, were those all from you, all 8 of them?
No, it was all from one play, The Color Purple. But The Color Purple was nominated for Best Play in a musical. Toby was nominated for Best Director. I think the choreographer got Best Choreographer.
You know, she's definitely embraced arts and the importance of it in the community, and I think that's great. I think I disagree with you a little bit about CA's headquarters being in Symphony Woods and that being a draw. I don't see their headquarters being a draw. I do think that putting theater there and I think creating meaningful places for families to go, that's going to help.
Well, it's a draw in the fact that where I'm coming from with that is CA is it's really the Parks and Recreation Association for Columbia. If it's Columbia's government, really. It's not a Columbia's non-incorporated city.
Yeah, but the George Howard Building's not a draw.
It could be, but if you look at towns throughout the country, City Hall is usually, you're allowed to do a little bit more interesting architecture. It's usually a defining part of a town, the town hall, the town center.
Okay.
And I think this gives them the opportunity to do that. Now, whether they will, I mean, it's all in the execution. So there's a lot we don't know and how this come together. But I think the idea is good, and that's what really you want to embrace here, is the idea of can you get there. So
every legislative session in Maryland, there's always some piece of legislation that we kind of scratch our heads and wonder why and where did this come from and what's the backstory behind why this piece of legislation even got introduced. So the one to date for me is the Howard delegation approving a bill which gives the library system employees the option to unionize. So apparently there is no Howard County Library System employee that has asked for a union. There's been no noise that we're aware of a need for a union or disgruntled employees feeling like they need to have a union in order to be heard. Yet this legislation got introduced, which is going to allow the library system employees to form a union if that's what they choose to do.
Yeah, it's a solution seeking a problem.
Or, once again, is it politicians looking for a block vote?
That's what I'm calling it.
We've now got enough people in the library system. We'll come up with something that we give them as a group, and in turn, we hope that we get their vote.
Look, I don't think I'm talking out of school when I say that the unions generally support the Democratic Party. So anytime a Democrat can do a nod towards something towards the union, it really doesn't cost them anything. This isn't negotiating on behalf of the union. This is giving the union an opening, a door. It's a gesture. And I think that's what it's about. This is about Democratic politics, giving a nice gesture to the unions. I don't hear an overwhelming call to unionize the library employees.
And the library's board of trustees actually took no position on this, which was, kind of interesting. They couldn't really come out against it because the legislation was introduced at the request of the county.
When was the last time you heard about a disgruntled library employee?
Yeah. What is your gripe? The Dewey Decimal System's not working for me? I mean,
Well, yeah, as I said before, it's getting all those books in proper order is a lot, pretty stressful.
It is. Now, speaking of the library, they have their annual big fundraiser coming up, Evening in the Stacks, Sparkle and Spurs. That's kind of a Western theme this year. And I think you and Dave are actually both on the...
We're on the honorary committee.
Honorary committee.
That's not a real committee. It's just kind of an honorary committee.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah, I guess.
You're important.
But you have a better job.
I'm a guest bartender.
A guest bartender. A celebrity bartender.
Yeah, well, whatever that means.
You're a pretty big deal. Yeah. So you
keep thinking that.
You and our fellow Howard, one of my fellow bloggers, Tom Cole.
Yep.
Is going to be a celebrity.
Vicki Goodman.
Vicki Goodman.
Blossoms of Hope.
Yep, the Blossoms of Hope. Mickey Gomez coming back. She was invited back because she was the top. She's part of Celebrity Bartender. You know how that works, right? You got to get tips.
You have to get tips.
That's what they want. Like,
that's why you didn't get invited back.
That's right. I didn't get enough tips. That's why Mickey did. Mickey beat the pants off me. So she got invited back. And who else you got on there? You got Dick Story.
Dick Story and Pam Clore.
From the chamber. Uh huh.
Yeah, exactly. So that'd be fun.
Is that it? That's around
there? Six of us.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
So anyway, Saturday, February 23rd, 7 to 11 at the Charles Miller Branch and Historic Center.
And tickets, at the price, you should have bought them before today because the price just increased to $125 a head.
They were $100. They've gone up to $125, and you can get tickets online.
But I should tell people, too, there's a limited number. There's only 600 tickets available. As of last weekend, they were half sold out. This is an easy one for the guys. Valentine's Day gift, buy her a ticket. Take her. You can enjoy it together. dancing.
That might work for you. That's not going to work for me.
Look, I'm on the honorary committee. I'm selling here.
www.hclibrary.org. Check it out. All right. Anything else story-wise?
Enough of us.
Enough about us. Nikki, welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening and not laughing too hard at our stories. Nikki Highsmith-Vernick is the new president and CEO of the Horizon Foundation.
Well, not so new.
About a year.
Almost a year.
Yeah, coming up.
March 1st.
So, well, you made it a year.
I'm still here. They haven't kicked me out yet.
That means you must not have pissed off your board too badly yet. So that's great. Congratulations. welcome.
Thank you.
So you come to us from Philadelphia?
Mm-hmm. Philadelphia for the past 12 years.
Okay. And what did you do there?
I had two kids.
Yeah, well, say no more.
Yeah, that happens.
But beyond that, worked actually worked nationally on health policy in capitals across the country.
Well, that's a good place to start. So a lot of people, what is Horizon Foundation?
So the Horizon Foundation is a conversion foundation. So we started when Howard County General Hospital was sold to Johns Hopkins. And I think what's indicative of our community, it was a nonprofit being sold to a nonprofit. Legally, if a for-profit sells to a non-for-profit, you have to set up a foundation. But the hospital board and the community sort of demanded that the proceeds be put into the foundation. This is a gift to the community.
Well, of course, but if you go to some of the backstory, the hospital could have sold to a private as well. Mm-hmm. So this was kind of to equal level the playing field.
Level the playing field.
Trying to keep the money in the county.
Yeah.
So we have an endowment of almost $80 million. We spend about $4 million in the community a year. And
really?
Our mission is to improve health and wellness for people who live or work in Howard County.
So historically, or I should say since the creation of Horizon, the definition of the benefit and welfare of Howard County residents and workers has been pretty liberally construed. And a lot of money was spent on a lot of different projects. And you really, it was hard not to fit that criteria. Would that be a fair statement?
So I think from the beginning, the foundation has really cared about the social determinants of health, that we know that your education, your housing, your social well-being, all of those contributes to your overall health status. We know where you live contributes to your health status.
Yeah,
and so
you see my house.
Funded a lot in those areas.
You got to see his honeybee list.
But over the past year, we've just decided to focus. Although $4 million sounds like a lot of money in terms of some of the problems that we have in the county, it's not enough. So we've really honed our focus, and we're working on helping every child achieve and maintain a healthy weight in the county, and looking at quality, affordable access to health services in the county, primary and preventive care services.
So aside from getting rid of sugary drinks in schools, how do you get the kids to stop eating junk food?
So behavior change is hard, and it means that we need to work with individuals and their families, and it also means that we have to change the environment within which they live, learn, and play.
So what kind of programs would do that? I mean, you know, I'm kind of leading it up to, okay, so you have this $4 million, and you want to battle childhood obesity. You do this initiative where you dump the sand in the school and say, you know, we got to get rid of all these sugary drinks. But how do you then... where does the money go to change behaviors?
So we're looking at three different levels that we're trying to change behaviors. One is the individual level, the other is the community, and the last is kind of the policy governmental level.
Okay.
So at the first level, the individual, we've launched HowardCountyUnsweetened.com, and we are blogging and using social media to get out the message that sugary drinks is the single source of added sugar in children's diets, that they now represent in teens almost 13% of their daily caloric intake, and they have no nutritional value, and we should probably drink less.
13% of drinks?
For teens. No, 13% of their caloric intake in a day no nutritional value.
We should note here that Nikki is drinking water.
I'm drinking water.
and there's no sugar in my coffee.
Good.
And she really doesn't love the Big Gulp.
So in the mall, if you walk in through the food court in the mall, we've got some signage over there that talks about obesity and that sugary drinks can lead to obesity, which leads to the three biggest causes of death in the county, being stroke, heart disease, and diabetes. So one is looking at individual behavior and trying to work with parents to show that they're better options. We have the Better Beverage Finder on our website that lists over 300 healthy options, healthy drink options in the county, and it also tell you where to buy them.
Other than just water, water, and water?
Other than just water, water. We know people want choices.
Yes.
So
yes.
We are providing low-calorie options for parents.
I don't think people know that.
Yeah. So you can even pull it up on your mobile device. It's mobile-friendly. And you're in the store, or you're, you know, you're on the way home trying to grab something for your kid's soccer game, you know, pull up the Better Beverage Finder, and you can have different options than the Capri Suns.
Is that a separate app, the Better Beverage Finder?
It is.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
So
that's the individual level. The community level is we're looking at wherever children live, learn, and play, and try to make changes in those environmental settings. This week, we were able to award 58 child care centers in the county that are now providing better nutritious food, that are not serving sugary drinks. My daughter's child care removed all juice from the child care centers.
Yeah, they better, right?
Yeah.
Okay, if yours, if you can't get them to do that, who will, right?
a little more pressure there, I would think.
Offering less screen time for the kids and more outdoor play.
How do you get kids to go outdoor to play when it's freezing outside? What do you do? How do you motivate?
Wait a minute.
You put gloves on.
That's not to me the obstacle. I grew up playing. I don't think the problem is that they don't want to go outside because it's cold. I think the problem is that they're attached to their electronic devices. That has become their entire form of socialization.
I don't think we've come up with alternatives that are better than the electronic devices outside.
So I will tell you that the research says we're not going to exercise our way out of this problem. So it really is about calories in, and contrary to the COVID ads that will be shown in the Super Bowl this Sunday, a calorie is not a calorie is not a calorie. 140 calories of a Coke is not the same as 140 calories of fruits and vegetables. So,
yeah, and beer has actually wheat in it, so it's good. Am I right? I'm not a healthcare professional.
No comment.
You're not going to get her to admit that beer's, come on, beer's better than soda? How about wine?
Well, let's go back to
wine
when you and I were kids, right?
Okay.
The number of options that are available now have just grown tremendously. And so the soda industry will actually say that soda consumption has gone down. But it's actually the consumption of soda plus energy drinks plus sports drinks plus juices that have gone up in the country.
And the energy drinks are real high.
So can I ask about the energy drinks?
Yeah.
So do they really have any meaningful... I mean, I know there's electrolytes, and it can help... when you're dehydrated, I guess it can help replenish your system.
You can make it just like Michael Phelps if you drink enough of them.
Is it really just a scam?
No comment. No, I think parents need to kind of look at everything that they're providing to their children and think about them in totality. So is one energy drink or is one Coke bad? No. But when kids are having four or five Cokes a day by the time they enter high school, that's a problem. So the last level of this is we're changing our environment. We're trying to work with, again, where kids are living, learning, playing, and making it easier to offer healthier choices. You know, we're working very much with the school system to try to look at eliminating sugary drinks from vending machines in the school systems.
You're up against a tough thing there because a lot of these soda companies sponsor billboards and scoreboards or stuff in schools and... Yeah.
And you know, so we realize that, you know, we can't out-advertise some of the soda.
Right. It's never going to happen.
But this community is tight. We can make changes through, you know, community action and community taking charge of an issue that's really important. We have 20,000 kids in this county that are overweight or obese and that their habits lead to early death. We have the first generation of children that are not going to live as long as their parents.
So, are you making any progress with the high schools?
We are making progress with the school system through the wellness policy, which will be voted on the school board in the next couple of months. So keep it on your agenda for the next time.
So, and this might sound like a crazy analogy, but I want to do the murders in Baltimore and guns with obesity and drinks. Okay, analogy. Bear with me.
Wow, I'm interested in this.
Well,
one. Where are you going?
Where I'm going with this is, I don't think the solution to our murder problem is eliminating guns. I think it's a cultural problem that exists in our society that we maybe don't value life. Or mental health. There's a lot of things that contribute, and I don't think that the elimination of guns isn't the solution. Similarly, I think eliminating sugary drinks makes it more of an obstacle, so it's harder to get my gun or my big gulp. But isn't this really about a mindset change that needs to occur?
I can almost envision a kid at high school saying, "Hey, you want to buy a Coke? I got some in my locker."
How do we really change the mindset of people? And how much of that should be done by you? And how much of it needs to get done at home?
It has to happen both places. So it has to happen in the home, it has to happen in the community, and it has to happen with government action. So I don't think any of those things in isolation are going to work. It sort of takes all...
It's a triage.
It's a triage, and it takes on, you know... This is a public health model that has worked. It worked in tobacco. It worked in other ways.
That's true.
So, yes, working at individual level, working with families. We did focus groups in the county of all demographics, all races, and we found that the parents that don't buy it for their kids, they're not drinking it. They're not drinking it at schools. They don't ask for it at birthday parties. So, yes, it starts there. But being a parent is hard, right? And
you
so
think?
If you go to the restaurant, I went to a restaurant the other night, and not only did it say, you know, usually you say, it says on the menu, milk, water, soda, yeah. right? This said,
or juice,
yeah. right? This menu said, milk and water extra, soda free.
That's a problem.
That's a problem.
That's a
That's
problem.
Something we can change. So I do believe it takes the family and it takes individual behavior change, but it also, we can change the environment, you know?
Let's talk about what else. I mean, so there's the childhood obesity thing, but what else? I mean, you alluded to a comment before we actually started taping today, where you said Howard County is perfect. I mean, everything's fine here, but you challenged some of that assumption.
So Howard County is the healthiest county in Maryland. And, you know, I say I have the hardest job, right? I have to maintain that status.
That's shocking to me.
But if we want to be best in nation status, there's more that we can do. So
you mean there's other places in the nation that are better than us?
There are. So one is tackling childhood obesity. That is the biggest public health problem crisis that we have in the county. The other is we have significant access issues. We have access barriers to insurance. We have access area issues around primary care. We have folks going into the ER for preventable chronic disease.
And wasn't Healthy Howard supposed to address that?
So Healthy Howard certainly provided a door to health and have increased enrollment in Medicaid and PAC. We still have about 18,000 people in the county who are uninsured. They will have options, other options for insurance starting later this year
as health reform rolls
out. But we also have folks, again, with preventable chronic diseases going to the ER who don't have an access to primary care. And we know we have significant disparities based on race, ethnicity, and socioeconomic status. So we know we have higher rates of diabetes in minority populations, and many of those folks have affordability issues and or using the ER for routine preventive care services.
Or even about there, you know, I speak from experience, there are people with insurance who don't go to the doctor.
Right.
Can't get an appointment, or it's just easier.
No,
and the
they just don't go.
They don't go at all.
They don't want to.
I bet that's more guys than women.
That's what I was just going to say. You know, a lot of guys.
Put my husband in that camp.
Is that factor into the equation when you talk about emergency room visits? Because they're the kind of person that one day they have a heart attack. Whoa, you mean I should have been taking care of myself and seeing a doctor on a regular basis?
Yeah, and going to a primary care physician, doing preventive screenings and doing preventive care
annual checkups.
And, I think part of our mission is to make sure that people have the information that they have and that they can act on it. And again, I think beginning to focus, and that is certainly a change that we've seen in philanthropy across the country, moving from sort of charitable giving to strategic catalytic philanthropy, which means I'm going to pick some things and I want to try to do them really well, really well, and I need other partners to do that. And everything that we're doing now, really leveraging our partnerships in the community and trying to make sure that we're not duplicating and that we're additive.
So I know when you came on board and you cut back a lot of the programming and support that existed with a lot of organizations, there were a lot of other nonprofits that had previously relied on support from Horizon and they weren't getting it anymore. You worked very hard, I think, to make sure that that was a well-received message. Has that gone well?
So I think, first of all, we did transition plans for everybody. So it wasn't like last year you got a lot of money and next year you did none. So we did transition plans with folks that received significant amount of funding from the Horizon Foundation. And I think the other is, again, talking about the role of philanthropic funding and how to use that in a catalytic way, seed money, innovation money. You know, think about startup capital, you know, and how do we use this for social change and social good, as opposed to the foundation funding direct services in perpetuity. And
right.
That is not, we are moving away from that model. And I think that's been a shift. I think it's been hard.
Well, I think it's always hard. With this initiative, and going back to the childhood obesity issue, when do you declare?
It's a big issue.
When do you declare victory?
So,
what does that look like? What's the metric?
So, for the first time, we will be releasing a strategic plan with 2 to 3 year metrics and 5 year metrics. So, in the first 2 to 3 years, we're looking at countywide sales data. So, is the sale of full calorie drinks, are they going up or down? And holding ourselves accountable to that.
Where do you get that data from?
It's a secret. It's a high secret. Now, we're purchasing the same sales data that the soda companies purchase. And we're making evaluation very much a part of our investment and making sure that we're investing and looking at if we're having an impact. So the first is sales data. The second is consumption. We're actually going to be doing surveys of consumption in the county so that we're being able to measure whether consumption is going down. And the third is people that will are joining our campaign, getting back to the partnership issue. You know, how many community organizations do we have signed on to HowardCountyUnsweetened.org? Over 5 years, we're looking at reducing the rates of childhood obesity. So we want to go from 1 in 4 and then decrease it. And we're also looking at decreasing rates of obesity based on, again, race, income, socioeconomic status.
So let me ask probably a little bit of an unpopular question. So I think we live in a world today where government is trying very hard at a large level to give everyone equal access, and we, I think, as a government, look at everyone fairly equally. How do we, and I'm not a fan of government telling people what they should and shouldn't do from
the
behavioral, the nanny state from a behavioral perspective. But if we accept that as the direction in which we're heading, how do you penalize the individuals that don't heed your advice and don't say, okay, you know what, I am going to cut back because I don't have I don't have health insurance, but I'm taking my food stamps and I'm buying sodas and my kids are drinking.
I'm going into Baltimore County to buy my sodas.
Right, because I can't buy them here.
Bootleg in Baltimore.
But my kids are drinking all
the
soda.
The border.
And now my kids have a childhood obesity issue. And I don't have insurance. So we end up paying for that
as a
society.
So I'll go back to, and I think that's a good point about sort of government telling you what to do and what not to do. So here's a story, right? So my son, who's almost 7, learned how to ride a bike at 3. So at 3, he's on one of these little 12-inch bikes, paddling, you know, as fast as he can.
And you're freaking out.
And he's got no training wheels, right? And I was lamenting to my neighbor, you know, he's got to wear a helmet, right? You know, why did life get so complicated, right?
Right.
You know,
right.
We didn't wear helmets,
okay,
right?
We turned out.
And she looked at me and she said,
maybe I should have.
Maybe I should have. So she looks at me and says, we've sort of advanced a little bit since then. You know, we have research. We have data that actually tells us that head injuries are a major, you know, source of problems. And I think that's sort of, we now have data and research on the causes and the links to obesity that we didn't have 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. We know that soda consumption and increased soda consumption leads to obesity. And we know that obesity leads to chronic disease, which is costing the healthcare system major dollars. So I think the government does have a role. Mm-hmm. It is paying for the healthcare of county employees, and so I think they do have a role in helping to encourage people to choose the right behaviors. And I think in terms of penalty, we can use the health insurance system. We can have higher premiums for people that are, you know, not providing, not living.
Not getting an annual physical, not doing. But you see that being realistic in our society?
I do.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
So part of I'm going back to your mission of health and wellness in Howard County, and that covers a lot of things. So outdoor activities and is certainly part of it. You're saying you can't exercise your way out of it.
So I will say that we are looking at the issue of healthy design, and this will resonate, I think, with Columbia very much. So we're looking at
walkable communities.
How do we have a walkable community? How do we have accessible bike trails? How do we have walking trails? How do we have accessibility to local sustainable food? How do we look at air pollution? You know, how do you think of the built environment, and how do our county policies support healthy living as much as the healthy environment that we live in? And so we're going to be looking at that over the next year. We're also looking at mental health access, and do we have gaps in the county related to mental health needs, and how can we begin to potentially fulfill some of those?
You know, it's funny. Some of the criticism of the Symphony Woods Park plan was it puts a parking garage across the street from where CA headquarters is, and so people have to walk all that way.
Oh, no. How about we have parking spaces at the mall? You know, we'll have ones way over there for the healthy.
Get out and walk
get
around
out and
a
walk
bit.
Around. So our office building is right across the street from Symphony Woods. I took a walk over there the other day. It's really hard to walk around in there.
It
really is. And as a, you know, I work right across the street. I should be able to walk over there with my lunch.
Did you walk here today?
I did.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
You walked here? Excellent. Now, that's not an easy walk.
It's not the answer you expected, is it?
I tried the other day to walk from our office building to the Rouse building. And one, I almost got ran over
twice. It's not an easy walk. No.
You know, cars are not used to walkers.
I'm sorry. I thought that was you.
And there's not a sidewalk that goes from here to there. No. So we're really looking at, again, the built environment and how we begin to think about our county planning and zoning from a health perspective and not just from the other
you know, when you started 20 minutes ago talking about childhood obesity and drinks, you know, I felt like, okay, it's kind of narrow. But as you continue and you look at all these little aspects that you can work with, I mean, so that's really all going to be part of the strategic plan and how to work with all these different partners.
Yeah.
And
I like the comment, you can't exercise your way out of it yet, but that still remains a very key part of it.
Yeah, you can't exercise your way out of it. It remains a key part. And particularly when we're working with pediatricians in the county, right? They're going to be doing obesity anticipatory guidance. And that's screen time, that's exercise, that's diet, nutrition, all those things.
But going back to the walking and the exercise, so do you see yourself funding some initiatives in that regard too?
Okay. Right now we're in a planning phase.
Okay.
But yes.
So you're looking for things like...
So we funded Tri-Columbia last year.
Right.
You know, they were one of our grantees. We funded, we're funding the after school programs at the Columbia Association, both in terms of, again, nutritious meals, snacks for kids after school, but also exercise programs after school.
Okay.
So yeah, we're doing...
Cool. Well, it sounds like you got some great, great ideas and a lot of work ahead of you.
It's fun.
Well, I think a lot of people now, if they listen to this, they know more about what Horizons. Except a lot of people didn't know what the Horizon Foundation was doing. And what,
so tell
what
me again, just
about.
So for the benefit of the listeners, if they want to get involved or help or learn more about better choices for their families, what's the best way to reach out?
So HowardCountyUnsweetened.org is the website. The Better Beverage Finder is on there. You can also sign up to join the coalition. We have a blog. We are on Twitter.
But they can download that
Facebook.
Better Beverage Finder through iTunes? And
No, it's not actually an actual app.
Okay.
But it is mobile device friendly on the website, so you can pull it up on your mobile phone and have options. And I think about, you know, for me, the big issue is sports. You know, that's a big thing here in Howard County. You know, I think the next time that you're bringing snacks after the basketball game or the soccer game or the baseball game, you know, kids will drink water if you give it to them.
Yeah, we had a conversation about the team moms organize somebody to bring snacks after a game, and I think you and I were talking about how a mom brought, like, you know, bags of Fritos and, you know.
The first baseball game that I went to in Howard County, it was three snacks after the baseball game. Now, meanwhile, he's six, right? So half the game he's playing in the dirt.
Right.
He's not moving much.
He's not moving much playing baseball. It was Cheetos, Gatorade, and I think some sort of cookie. Like,
sounds good to me.
And that's the problem. Nikki, thank you very much for joining
us today.
Thank you.
That about wraps up yet another episode of Then There's That. Together with my co-host, Paul Scalney, we'd like to thank our producer, Dave Bittner, who makes us look good on the Internet. We'd also like to thank General Growth Properties and the Mall in Columbia for hosting our show again today. We'll be back again on February 15th with special guest Claire Bolden, author of the insightful and often humorous local blog, Desperate English Housewife in Washington, along with our usual blend of hyper-local news and commentary. We hope you join us.